I was going to say this one, though, we should do. You should say who you are. You should say, I'm Marissa Ross. I'm the wine editor of Bon Appetit and author of Wine All the Time. And then I can be like, I'm
Sit the fuck down.
Former sommelier, now winemaker, and meme
god. We realized that we didn't ever tell you who we are.
Yeah.
So I haven't had this new vintage yet.
I've never had any of his wines.
Shut up.
Seriously.
You've never had any of his
wines? I've never tasted one of Evan Lewandowski's wines.
Okay. Oh, it's recording.
Yeah, I've been recording. I'm tricky.
Episode 2. I'm one of your hosts, Marissa A. Ross, wine editor at Bon Appetit magazine, as well as the author of the book Wine All the Time, The Casual Guide to Confident Drinking. And now I'd like to introduce my co-host, Adam Vuvuzelis.
You are so much better at this than I am.
Except you're better at saying your last name, probably.
Yeah, I'm Adam Vuvuzelis. I am a former sommelier, now winemaker, and a meme person. I do memes on the internet and t-shirts, very, very cool t-shirts.
He's actually just a meme.
I'm just a meme, actually.
When, by meme person, he means that he was born on Reddit and has come alive.
I never
off
thought
Twitter.
We'd make it to pod number 2. I'm shocked. I feel like pod number 2 means we're going to pod number 100.
We're going to pod billion.
How many people? Joe Rogan is over 1,000. Not to say that we're Joe Rogan, but he's like
not
over
1,000.
Not to say
1,000. That we aren't Joe Rogan.
That's true. I got my bullet coffee right here. Yeah, and I was doing deadlifts earlier.
Speaking of bullet coffee.
What?
Oh, I was just going to pour wine instead.
Oh, let's do that. That's much better.
So today we're going to be pouring the Ruth Lewandowski Rosé Cuvée Zero 2017. I'm assuming the zero just means zero anything added because that's how Evan Lewandowski rolls.
I hope so. I hope it's not marketing.
I don't think it's marketing. Evan Lewandowski is a good man. Who I love dearly, but that's not why I love his wines. Although I haven't tried this one yet, so we're trying it for the first time together.
Am I just realizing that the label is cut in the shape of Utah?
I know, yeah, it's cool, right?
I was always wondering what that notch was, and now I realize.
I mean, I've never asked him, but
it's a state, right? It's Utah.
Well, Utah is a state, that is correct.
I've heard.
I mean, I've been there like once. but so I haven't had this new vintage. It's from the Fox Hill Vineyard in California. Which is something really cool that Evan Lewandowski does. The Ruth Lewandowski wines currently are all now sourced in California. He grabs all his grapes in California and then takes them in a temperature-controlled truck to Utah, where he then makes the wine. Although he has started planting in Utah, and his future is going to be in Utah, so it's really cool.
His ultimate goal is to grow and produce in Utah exclusively?
Yes.
And is there, I don't know, I'm sure there are other people that grow grapes and do wine in Utah, but I am unfamiliar with
I don't
any
know
of it
them.
If they do.
I think they're probably all Mormons and they probably hate me.
It's weird though. I mean, it is true that we think of Utah as like this sort of anti, where like Louisiana, I feel like is like this pro-alcohol state. And then you think of Utah.
Moonshine and God.
Yeah, and just Mardi Gras and tits. But you
and
don't.
God.
Yeah. Cheers, by the way.
Cheers.
You don't think of Utah as a state really at all when it comes to alcohol. Like, it's, you think of
no, because they have those crazy laws. And
do you know? I don't know. I
don't
guess
know enough about it
to know why. Like, I guess they can make wine.
Yeah, they can make wine anywhere. I mean, I've spoken with Evan about this, you know, in a brief way. So I don't feel comfortable speaking fully on it. But what I can say about this wine is, it's. I can't pronounce these grapes. You're going to have to pronounce them.
Oh, I don't know.
You're going to do a better job. It is unfine and unfiltered. So there's that. Now wait. Now you pronounce the grapes because I definitely can't.
Sauzão? I don't know.
65% Sauzão.
Which I think...
It's a Portuguese.
It is Portuguese. Both of these are Portuguese.
It's two Portuguese grapes. So it's 65%. Forgive us. Sauzão. And then
isn't Sauzão, isn't that Kevin Federline's hit single?
I have no idea.
Actually, that was Popo Zhao. I thought you would know that.
Popo, I was not, by the time Kevin Federline was around, I was very into Saves the Day, so I didn't have time for.
Oh, it was actually pretty good. Emo. It was like it wasn't bad, okay. But it was Popo Zhao.
Okay, well, this is not
Kevin
Popo
Federline.
Zhao.
Anyway.
Oh wow! I just made like a really my voice. Okay, so anyways, so it's 65% says Zhao. Don't know if we're
saying. And then Taraga Nacional.
35%.
Yeah.
What was the grape again?
Taraga Nacional. You make me feel uncomfortable, Nacional.
What did you used to do when you were a sommelier, Adam?
I would say it poorly, and then somebody would correct me, and then I would say, typically they would be of European descent, and I would say something incorrectly in French or in Spanish or Italian, and they would have a thick American accent, or like so a thick French, Italian, or Spanish accent, and they would say, Bourgon, and I'd be like,
Bourgogne,
and I'd be like, Bourgon.
Yeah.
And they'd be like, Bourgon, and I'd say something along the lines of like, you know, pronounce this English American yeah. word, and they'd be like, hello. And
I'd hamburger.
Be like, yeah, I'd be like, it's hello. And they'd be like, hello. And they'd be like, see, it doesn't really matter. We understand each other, and it's yeah. working out okay.
Something embarrassing talking about begonia and not being able to pronounce regions. When I was doing the audio book for my book, yeah. it literally took me an hour to say begonia because I kept wanting to go into this Julia Child like, Bourguignon, and it's like it's not Bourguignon, like it's not that's
well
not,
beef Bourguignon is
the thing, but like that's not the same as Begonia. Yeah.
No, do you think that ultimately, like I know that some people are really hyper, they think language is like this incredibly important thing, right?
Well, language is very important,
but they think that like if you can't pronounce something properly in some ways. Almost means that you don't understand the wine or you don't understand the thing.
But you're right. Language is extremely important. And we're going to get to that right after we tell you a little bit about this wine, which was a great segue.
It's rosé.
It's rosé, but it's a really dark, beautiful rosé. It's almost like a light red. My boss, Adam Rappaport at Bon Appetit, which you should get a subscription to so they don't fire me, would love this.
Do you know if it's Saunier or if it's, you know, I don't know the method.
I actually don't know. So I just bought this today at Lou Wine Shop in Los Feliz, and I don't have the tech sheet on me. And the website, unfortunately, on the Ruth Lewandowski site does not say what what it is for this new vintage. I feel like it looks like Saunier.
Yeah, me too. I agree. And this is something.
Should I text him real quick?
Yeah, do it. This is the best. But I would say something that like this also goes like all these people who are wine professionals, they have to do what we're doing right now. They do as well, right? They taste something. And if they don't have the winemaker or a wine rep or the website available, they kind of have to guess as well until they get the information. Yeah. It's not like we by default know the answers to these things. I guess we just know the questions to ask.
Also, too, I mean, I do feel like it has like a definite Saunier quality to it.
And color.
The color, but also like the concentration of the flavor. So for those of you who are not familiar with the Saunier method, am I saying it right?
Saunier?
Saunier?
I believe so.
Saunier? So I can spell it for you. It's
Saguenay?
It's Saguenay. It's a Saguenay method. So
what happens when you become 100 years old? You have hold on, I got a good joke. Ready?
Yeah.
Hold on. I was just going to say something about old ladies' boobs, and then it becomes saggy to the knee. Saggy knee. Saunier. But never mind.
It doesn't work as well as you think it's working, but it's fine.
99% of what I do.
I said, "Hey, drinking the new rosé. Is it Saunier method or what's up? Talking about it on the pod. LOL." So I guess we'll see. He's like, what pod? So for those of you that aren't from...
Yeah, we're not actually going to interview people. We're just going to text them.
Ooh, that'd be hilarious. We just pronouncing everything wrong. So for those of you that aren't familiar with the Saunier method, it's basically where a winemaker is making a red wine mm-hmm. and they bleed off some of the juice.
Correct.
And then that juice is then used to make a rosé, but then that makes that redder wine that they took the juice from more concentrated.
Correct. And I think there are some people that, right. So for people out there, it is possible to blend white wine and red wine to make a rosé.
Yes.
That is not necessarily, maybe.
I think it's becoming more popular.
It was popular for conventional wine. And now it's becoming something that I feel like the natural wine community is embracing again.
Absolutely. I mean, even like with if you talk about like L'Octavon, like Alice from the Octavon wines. Or
co-fermenting white and red grapes.
Yeah, and also like Patrick Sullivan, and a lot of the Australians are doing that. So I believe these are both red wines though. I've never had either one of these grapes alone. But that's like the really cool thing about natural wine. I feel like I'm constantly trying grapes that I've never heard of or, you know, seen before.
Also, I know this isn't intentional, but I really am actually happy that we're showing that like it's okay to not know everything in wine.
Dude, no one knows everything. That's just the way it is. That's just the way it is.
Things will always be the same.
Things
never be the same. Always be the same.
Yeah, always be the same. I was trying to say something about how like, you know, you'll never know everything.
Should I do the Tupac part?
Things are changing.
Yeah, it's, you know, same old faces. Blah, blah.
We need to stop. This is embarrassing.
So yeah, I think the wine's delicious. It does have a slightly, is it slightly oxidative in just the ever so.
It is slightly oxidative in a very, very slight way, but it's still really good. It's rich.
Yeah,
it's a rich rosé. I mean, it's definitely leaning on the light red side.
I was going to say, if I was tasted this blind, I would almost think it would be like a really unctuous, I can't believe I said that word, but
I love that word.
A really unctuous white. Like it's got the weight and texture of like a really rich.
Yes.
White wine.
I would say that if I was blind tasting it, I would almost think it was a Saignée, however the fuck you pronounce it. I can spell it. That's all that matters as a writer, except now I do podcasts and I probably should learn how to talk. God, so much spit in my mouth right now. If I was blind tasting it, I'd almost think it was a Saignée method from France. Like,
yeah,
you know, something Syrah, like a Syrah Mourvèdre,
totally.
You know,
totally.
Kind of a more classic.
Not me. I would blind taste it and go, Portuguese varieties from Utah.
And then I'd be like, it's not from Utah, actually. They're from California. It's the Fox Hill Vineyard.
And be like, God, you're such an idiot.
You're such an idiot.
That.
You can't taste the Fox Hill Vineyard and the Utah vinification.
Do you even know what terroir is?
Do you even know? Do you even know what California tastes like when it's fermented in fucking Utah?
Your glasses say chef and sommelier on it.
Oh, wow, they do. I got these from... wow, they do. They legitimately say chef ampersand sommelier.
That's the name of my new restaurant. I'm just going to, it's going to be called Chef and Sommelier. And
well, ampersand restaurants are so popular.
Are they still? Yeah, they are.
I think so. I saw someone make a joke about it.
This wine is good. I mean, we're already, don't listen.
Don't listen who? Everyone knows
son.
What we drink.
I don't want to hear him how, like 20 years in the future.
He's like, my dad used to get drunk and make jokes about grandma's saggy tits.
We're like halfway. We've already poured like half of this bottle because it's so delicious.
Yeah, but also too, you got to remember that a bottle of wine only has 4.5 glasses
it's
in it.
The
according
I believe
to
his
me.
Name is Stanko Radicon.
Yeah.
Of the Radicon wines, believes that the appropriate amount of wine for one person during sitting down for a meal is 500 milliliters.
Yeah, and, that's about three glasses.
And he believes that the appropriate for two is obviously 1,000 milliliters. So I believe all of his bottles are 500 ml or 1,000 ml.
Yes. It's unfortunate that many of his wines just aren't drinkable.
Yeah. And he does extra small corks, but I don't know why.
His wines are either like super, super special or like you just want to kill yourself. You're like,
because you just spent like $200 on...
Yeah, and you're like, ah.
Stanko. Is his name Stanko? Stinko?
I think it's Stanko.
Stanko? You're like, Stanko!
Yeah. Which is such like a George Costanza, or not George Costanza, what's his dad's name?
I don't know.
How do we know?
Serenity Now.
Yeah,
that
Serenity
guy?
Now. Yeah, Ben Stiller's dad. You know, everyone's dad.
I feel
Stanko!
Like, I feel like he would be into natural. He like if have you seen like Seinfeld of the future?
Yes.
They need to do an episode where Kramer gets into natural wine. Okay. And then I also feel like George's dad would get into natural wine.
And then they would fight about it like they did the man's ear.
I think like that
would fight about. They would fight about the terminology of what natural wine probably is.
I mean, there's a lot of that going on right now. I feel like I'm
Frank Costanza.
Frank Costanza.
Serenity Now.
Frank, what would Frank's definition of natural wine be, and what would Kramer's definition of natural wine be? Kramer's would be like it's a feeling, like you drink it and you just know.
Yeah.
And Frank would be like, no, it's. actual technical terms.
Frank would be like, it's grappa.
So what is your definition of natural wine?
So yeah, segueing back into what we were going to segue, talking about the importance of language today, excluding whether or not you can pronounce regions and grapes correctly, because that's just not fair. But talking about the definition of natural wine is so hard because it really does mean, one, it is ambiguous, and two, there isn't an actual definition, and three, it means so many different things to so many people. For me personally, my ideal of natural wine is nothing added, nothing taken away, whether that be in the vineyard or in the cellar, ideally. But I also am not against small amounts of sulfur, so added at bottling. I'm definitely against sulfur in the vineyard. But
you think intention ever comes into natural wine? So like
that could mean anything. What do you mean?
When I mean intention, I mean, so let's say I'm starting my wine and I have a goal to be natural, and that is somewhere that I want to reach, but I can't immediately because maybe I can't buy the, like I've of struggled course. With like buying organic vineyards or learning. And so there's growth. So do you start off the discussion as being a natural winemaker, or do you wait until you actually are a natural winemaker? Does intention come into play?
I think it does, but I also think that just not using the word natural at all is great, because it's wine. It should be treated as wine. I actually don't love the conventional versus natural arguments, even though those are absolutely necessary for what we do. But, you know, it's wine. It's wine. And I think the intention is very, very important. But, you know, you need to also realize the intention behind the words that you're using. So if you're doing major filtrations or fining or whatever, don't use the word natural, because it's, I think, disingenuous. Of course, intention counts, but I think you have to be very careful with the words that you're using, especially as natural wine grows and is having a current moment of trendiness.
I actually personally, I think natural wine is the default. Like, I feel like wine is natural wine. So if I say wine, I'm referring to natural wine. And I think anything other than that is the exception.
But what is your definition of natural wine?
I think yours is pretty spot on. I believe first and foremost, the vineyards have to be completely organic or biodynamic.
Absolutely.
Second, I think that you have to...
With dry farming, I think that dry farming, unless... Well,
in California, it can be tough sometimes.
Yeah, in Italy too last year. Okay, I take that back. But
dry farming is definitely... I don't think it defines natural wine, though.
I think dry farming is a very, very important part of it, though.
You know, it's so funny, though, because so many people think that natural wine means that it's hands-off in the cellar, but really what it means is so many more hands in the cellar.
No, the most hands in the cellar.
Right, it's so
funny. Zero hands in the vineyard and, like, lots and lots and lots of actual handwork in the cellar.
Yeah, like, it's funny because I feel like people think that natural... I think we touched on it last time. We were like, oh, just...
It's a crock pot.
Yeah, but, like, natural wine actually needs the most amount of...
Yes,
work.
For it to be well crafted.
You have to constantly be making sure that everything's going okay, because you're so susceptible to stuff going wrong.
Absolutely.
And you have no technology really, or no thing to fix it.
Pause. Evan Lewandowski got back to us. He says, hootie hoo. And now there's dots. All right, maybe I should have waited. I didn't know.
No, it's okay.
I think it's funny though that he said hootie hoo. I fucking love Evan. I can't believe you hadn't had his wines before.
No, I've just never had the opportunity. I don't really go out very often.
Yeah,
I don't
but he
buy
was like three.
Often.
He was like three tables down from you at Brumaire. I mean, you did have your kid there and your wife, and you were busy. But
was he really?
Yeah.
I only saw. Shout out Joe Swick. He was right next to me.
No, well, shout out Joe Swick, who's in town right now. We should have interviewed him.
Oh, why didn't we?
He's at Apero right now.
Oh.
So it's not okay. So. We got the official hootie hoo and info from Evan Lewandowski. He says, nah, B, that's direct press. Can't press it quick enough. Suzhou is a dark, tannic, acidic mother. Mmm, yum, I say. Thank you.
There you go, direct press.
We were
wrong.
Yeah, direct press.
I can admit when I'm wrong.
We were wrong, but that's okay. Zizou, I swear on my fucking life, dude. I'm in this fucking meeting today, and they're like, why didn't you bring your dog? Go to fucking Italy. They're like, where's your dog? He's right here being an asshole.
He wants to be on the pod.
Zizou, I don't want you on the pod. Fuck on out of here.
So he's making this wine with the intention of making rosé.
Yeah, I mean, he calls it a rosé. It is a rosé.
No, I guess what I mean is he's buying grapes and picking and direct press, and he's like rosé. And he's not using this for anything else.
It doesn't sound like it. He said, that's why I love it. Herbal, structured, sappy, ageable. I agree with him. Thank you, Evan, for your quick response. So back to...
I can't wait for somebody in our comments to mention how we're wrong about stuff. I'm really excited about that.
Oh, they're... Well, it's okay. Okay. Which kind of goes back to what we're talking about. It's actually okay to be wrong about things because it's absolutely impossible to remember everything all the time about wine. Wine
not
is such
according to the master sommeliers.
Well, I mean, they might be able to like... Whatever. For me, I think that it's... I think if you're being realistic, it's physically impossible for a human to remember everything at all times. And, you know, especially when you're being put on the spot, whatever. But it's okay to be wrong about whatever. Like, you can be wrong as long as you're willing to say, yeah, I was wrong. Like, and you're not like an asshole about it. What you can't be wrong about, I don't think, is what you define your wines as. So like, for example, you know, we're talking about the ambiguity of the definition of natural. You know, there does still need to be purpose behind that word. And talking about intention, there has to be intention behind that word. You can't use the word natural for whatever you want, you know?
No, and you can't come up to me or anybody and say, well, I mean, isn't everything natural? Because that's not how this works.
No, and also too, as someone that has made a career by talking about wine in a way that most people don't talk about wine, that does not mean that I don't respect the common language that gives us the possibility to have conversations about wine, because we, you know, there has to be a commonality in our language so we can have conversations, not only conversations to bridge, you know, information, but also conversation, you know, just about wine in general. Like, there has to be common language.
There also has to be less of a fear of asking a winemaker. Sometimes I feel afraid, not afraid, but I ask a winemaker and I'm like, what are your practices? And it's like there's almost reluctance to say everything because they're afraid.
You think so?
I get it sometimes. I mean, I understand it too. Like, there's reluctance because you're afraid of judgment. And because there is this ambiguous with natural. So they might go to a bar or restaurant and say they're natural. I think that there's a little bit of fear, right? Because you go to one shop or you go to one restaurant or one wine bar, and their definition of what they think wines that they're okay with pouring is different than the next appointment that they go to. So they have to be, and if you're like a traveling winemaker and you're in a new city that you've never been to before, you're in a big account and you don't know everybody, and this rep is taking you around and you're meeting all these people, and you know, one account is asking if your vineyard's organic, and then the next account is asking if you add sulfur, and then the next account is asking if you filter or not. And each one kind of has their own definition. So there's reluctance to give information directly because you're waiting to find out who that account, what they care about. Does that make sense?
No, that totally makes sense. I think, though, that like, for example, we asked Evan Lewandowski what this wine was.
Yeah.
I asked him if it was Saignee, whatever.
Saguenay.
It's Saguenay's. I asked him that. Now, I don't think that a winemaker would flat out lie and be like, yeah, it is, if he thought that was what I wanted to hear.
No, I'm not saying they're lying. No.
And I think I think there's a difference between a winemaker posturing themselves, which is what I think you're talking about, versus what we're trying to get out, which is the importance of common language. I think it's really important if we're trying to move natural wine and just, as we said, wine forward with education, we do have to have respect to language in some way. Like, we do have to have respect for the definitions that are already in place and make sure that we are correctly describing the wine so that the consumer can understand it, because so much of wine is already, yeah, but no. Like,
yeah, well,
kind of depends.
So when Frank Cornelison was in town maybe a year ago, maybe last time I...
when I took that sick picture of you guys?
Yeah, last time I saw him. And there had been a sort of a ongoing... I'm in a group chat with a bunch of super, super natty guys. And one of the things that came up was his wines recently about them being cleaner or less...
Rick Sanchez, and dude, this is where Rick and Morty comes in. Our last episode was all about Kanye, and this one we just burp like Rick Sanchez the entire time.
Less so that his wines had gotten cleaner, but that people professionally had started saying his wines had gotten cleaner. And so because...
But I think that his wines did get cleaner.
Well, because I have no filter, the first I'm like, oh, hey, Frank, how's it going? Why are your wines cleaner? Immediately, right? And his the rep behind was like, totally embarrassed that I
you
have
couldn't
no filter.
See it, but he was doing the hand the to kill the, sign, the sign, kill sign to your neck.
Yeah. And he was like, oh, I started doing minor filtering. And the fact that A, he was honest about it, I thought was kind of cool.
Great.
But B, he never the one thing that I didn't like though is like, so his wines were getting cleaner and he wasn't like, hey, by the way, maybe he was, but nobody heard it. I started filtering. So
But this goes back to your point of the posturing of winemakers.
I'm going to allow my reputation to continue.
You know, but it also depends on, like, this is why natural wine is like such a mind fuck, because it also depends on what kind of filtering.
Well, he said minor, and if you look at his wines, they're still like...
This is why natural wine is so hard and why it also doesn't have a definition, because, you know, there are some things that people can do.
Ask Evan if this one was filtered.
It's not. It's on the back of the label.
It says not filtered?
It says, yeah, it says unfined and unfiltered.
Can you ask him how many times he racked?
Oh, man. Yeah.
We're doing a text message interview.
I love it. So this is the hard thing about natural wine, but when we decided to do it, well, we wanted this episode, it's only episode two, so we're so...
Well,
I think we need to stick to like I think we need to move away from the definition of natural wine, because we're never going to come to a clear position on that.
We need to
focus on like the other language around it.
So you're talking about people appropriating the language of natural wine.
Yes.
When it's not natural.
Exactly. Or maybe bending the rules to kind of fit what they're doing. And I think on the one hand, like I'm not super dogmatic about natural wines, because I do want winemakers to be making the best wine possible. And sometimes that does not fit into nothing added, nothing taken away, nothing done to it. Like that doesn't work, you know?
There's a small amount of people in the world that have the luxury to truly do that.
And when they do that, I mean, that's like, you know, Danilo Marcucci, who did the Conoscibile della Staffa wines and a ton of Italian wines, you know, he is like the type of person that he feels his wine is a little too bitter, so he gets in every single fiberglass vat and pulls out all the green seeds. So there's no technology used. But it's still a natural wine, but he's doing it, you know, he's making it better.
But he hand picks out.
Oh yeah, he's crazy. He went through like 12 vats, like fiberglass vats, to pull out all the green seeds because it was becoming too bitter out of one of his wines in the 2017 vintage. Because he's so against technology. But that's like the sort of thing is like, okay, you know, there's.
Has he ever heard of like a net on a pole?
He doesn't. I cannot speak for Danilo Marcucci.
A pool skimmer?
I know. Yeah. We should send him one for his birthday. I think, where was I going with this? You know, the luxury or the dedication to make really great natural
wines. That's why those wines are so expensive too, right?
They're not that expensive.
Not
they're
his like, wines in particular, but I'm saying when you have those sort of those wines where all of that culminates can be on the price.
Well, I think
side.
That also goes back to the like how much of a luxury is it for you and how much of it is a dedication. There are some people, you know, that they just get to, like, they got their land given to them by their family, and, like, now they get to make great wine, and, like, they don't really have to worry about it.
This is the Rick Sanchez episode.
The Rick Sanchez episode.
Marty, I gotta tell you, Marty.
Aw, geez, Rick. Aw, geez.
Natural wine is all bullshit, and the universe is gonna kill us all.
Aw, geez, Adam.
I like it when Morty gets mad.
Aw, geez.
No, he's like, you know what? Fuck you, Summer. Like, when he's, like, really, like...
No, yeah, he's great. I can't do a good morning. Actually, I need to work on it. When I'm sick, I sound so much like Rick. It's amazing. Like, I almost wish I was sick more. but no, the definition of natural is so all over the place. But the words that we use to describe a wine and the techniques, those need to be somewhat in place. Like, you cannot call this a Seigneur. Like, I can't just decide that this is a wine, this is a Seigneur wine when it's direct press.
Right. We can't be like, no, you know what? We're going to call it Seigneur.
Yeah. Seigneur. Saguenay grandma wine. And I think it's really important. And I think that that's why it's also important for things like, you know, I wrote this thing for BA about I wanted to move away from calling them orange wines, and I want to call them skin contact wines because they're not all orange, and it's confusing for the consumer to call them orange wines because then they just think the actual color should be fucking orange when that's not the case. And I think it's the same for all language. Like, we have to find this language and actually respect the common language so that we can educate consumers and they can understand things.
But there's, I mean, that's the big, like, another discussion though is the marketing. I think we touched on it a little bit, but like the marketing of natural wine and how natural wine is sort of entering this new place where it's not a huge part of the wine market as far as like a global scale, but it's getting to a point in these major markets where people are starting to market themselves in as whether it's a natural wine restaurant or a natural wine retail store or bar or something. And then you go in and you're like, wait a minute, like maybe some of these are natural, but it's not like,
not fully. Like, even like I was at Vini Vari in Italy.
Yeah.
And there was wines there with like 80, 90 parts per million sulfur.
Yeah. Which that's, doesn't, I mean,
that just doesn't really work. Like, even
whatever your definition of natural wine is,
it's like 80, 90 parts per million sulfur is like,
there's some natural winemaker who's listening to this right now.
That's like, fuck.
That's like, fuck you guys.
Yeah. He's either like, fuck or fuck you.
Yeah.
No, I'm sorry. Like, you, like I said, I'm not against small sulfur adage at bottling. Like, if adding 10 parts per million, you know, sulfur to your wine is going to make the difference between it being able to travel across the fucking globe and for me to be able to drink it or not. Like, maybe do it.
I have a story for my winemaking experience. So my last vintage, I moved vineyards and I went to Paso Robles because I make Zinfandel, and I don't know if people like Paso Robles Zinfandel is sort of, you know, people think Turley and I think Turley. And there's like a historic sort of Paso Robles and Zinfandel are sort of historic for me.
I think that's true.
And so I was last year, I didn't do Paso. This year, I wanted to make sure I did Paso. And what's Paso but really fucking hot? So my grapes were a lot riper this year, even like picking. So Zinfandel is an unevenly ripening grape. So when you get your Brix,
which is sugar,
you're taking random samplings from the vineyards. And so you get your Brix measurement and it was the same Brix amount as last year, but there was way more shriveled grapes in this harvest than my previous. And I'm assuming it's because of the Paso. And is that Evan?
I have a he had Scanlon. So our friend Chris Scanlon is a rep for Sylvester.
Wait, he had Chris Scanlon hit you up?
Yeah. So,
the rep is hitting
you? Yeah, well, they're in the car together. So I asked Evan Lewandowski if about racking. And he's with his rep, Chris Scanlon, who's a rep for Sylvester Rovine, who does Evan's, the Ruth Lewandowski wines. I love them.
Isn't Chris Scanlon a winemaker too?
Yes. So Chris Scanlon says that I love how we are all over the place in this one.
It's all right. We're going to figure it out.
We're going to figure it out. One day we'll get it right. Anyways, the Ruth Lewandowski Cuvée Rosé 0 2017 that we're currently drinking is whole cluster, direct press, no juice racking, native ferment, native ML, no SO2, and racked once prior to bottling.
I knew it was racked,
though. Well, it was racked, yeah.
That's the Somme in me. Sorry.
Yeah, we knew it was racked.
Fuck you. I didn't know any of that, but I knew it was racked.
We knew it was racked. Well, it had to be racked. It's too clear. It's too clear. But in a good way. It's beautiful. It's beautiful. Okay. So Zinfandel. So they don't ripen at the same time.
It's an unevenly ripening grape, and I had a lot more shriveled grape. So even though my bricks were the same as last vintage, when they came in, I realized, fuck, this is a riper vintage than last vintage. I don't do anything to the wine. It's natural. So it's native yeast, and we don't add any sulfur. And I wanted waiting for the wine to go through mallow, and it was sticking. And so there was potential for there to be.
Why don't you explain what that might mean?
So there's.
So malolactic fermentation.
It's a different fermentation.
It's a secondary fermentation.
Correct. So there's the first fermentation, which is.
To make it alcoholic.
And then there's.
It's where the yeast eats the sugar and farts out alcohol.
CO2 and alcohol.
Yeah.
And then there's the malolactic fermentation, which I am not a scientist, so I can't really go into great detail what exactly is happening. It goes much slower than the other fermentation.
Yes.
And it can actually sometimes take up to years.
And many people believe that malolactic fermentation is an essential part of natural winemaking.
Right. And a lot of white wines, they halt and prevent mallow from happening.
Yes. Which some natural wine people are like, nah, that means it's not a natural wine. But that's debatable.
That's part of the question.
That goes into the ambiguous cloud of natural wine.
So as my wine is going, and it looks like it could stick, and it looks like there could be...
What do you mean by stick? Like stick is in stop fermentation?
The fermentation could stop.
The malolactic fermentation? Okay.
And I was worried about... Because I try and release early. I try and have a young wine. And so I'm not looking to have a wine sit in barrel or in tank for 2 years to finish mallow.
No, you gotta get them dollars.
I just don't have the budget. I just don't know. It's true though. I don't have the budget to do it. So I start asking my winemaker friends what options I have. What they, you want to get opinions. So I start asking around people who are natural winemakers what they would do in this scenario.
You even asked me, and I'm not a natural winemaker. Just saying that I'm.
So some people said filter. Some people said SO2. Some people said wait. So like everybody had their own sort of like.
I think I asked you, what do you want, Adam?
Money.
I know. And I was like, just do the SO2.
No. So like everybody. No,
I don't remember what I actually told you to do.
Everybody had their own sort of. I think. And then, I had my super natty friends, which is actually what we ended up doing, which is bottle.
Yeah.
And let there be a little bit of CO2. From the finishing of fermentation in the bottling and roll with it.
And it turned out great.
Yeah. And it worked out really well.
The alcohol is insane on it.
Yeah, it's a fucking wine, dude. Yeah,
no, it's like a fucking wine. It's like the wine that you're like, all right, I'll have one glass of this after dinner and then I'm totally getting laid. Like, I'm like, I could have sex with it. That's not true. Okay. I'm just gonna walk away from that.
Edit it out.
No, that's fine. You can leave that. You can let people know that I'm into having sex.
With anybody. After one glass of Zinfandel.
One glass of Zinfandel. Marissa Ross will fuck you.
Oh, hi, Ben.
He knows.
That's why there's no Zinfandel in this house.
No Zinfandel allowed. No, actually, Ben's like, well, wait.
Where's the Zinfandel?
He's like, actually, it only takes Marissa like a couple glasses and a good plate of pasta. And I'm like, yeah. All right, I'm just making it sound like I'm not such a slut. I started dating Ben when I was 23, and we've been together for 9 years.
And a Rick and Morty episode.
Yeah, we actually watch Rick and Morty every night during dinner.
How is that possible? Aren't you tired of it yet?
No.
You know what?
There's so much to learn.
Have I told you Kate and I are going through Sabrina the Teenage Witch?
No, that's not.
It is so fucking bizarre.
I'm sure it is. We got to stay on track, though. I'm not willing to get off track for Sabrina the Teenage Witch.
Anyway, so...
This is a Kanye, Rick and Morty, and wine podcast.
I don't want to talk about Kanye.
We can't. Well, we cannot talk about Kanye because we're trying to regain our lives.
Yeah.
Kanye has destroyed us over the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, I can't do it.
Okay. And, anyways, I love Zinfandel. I'm fucking.
So what I was saying is, that sounds like a Joe Swick label.
Right? I feel like it's already a Joe Swick label.
Yeah. So you ask all these people and they all have their own opinion. And that's where like this definition is allowed to be loose, right? Is they all have their own ideas, but they all fit within parameters.
Of course, but that's why the definition of natural wine is allowed to be flexible and ambiguous, but not the actual things. Like you can't say that, like you can't say, oh, I um you can't say unfiltered and then
have it be
filtered. And then have it be filtered.
You can't say native yeast and then inoculate or even really add nutrients.
No, exactly. So I guess my point is more like we need to have like natural wine is a ambiguous term that is, I think, always going to be a bit nebulous. Much like, I don't know if you guys saw the Rick and Morty episode where Jermaine from Flight of the Conchords is the gaseous.
Right, and Morty has this like moral obligation to save him.
Yeah, and his name is Fart, and he sings the Moon Man song.
Yeah.
Goodbye, and who's the guy, Moon Man.
Alexander Krabopoulos, is that his name?
What's yes,
his
name? Yeah,
The bounty hunter?
Yeah, I don't know, that sounded right. I don't know, I've had some wine.
Something Krabopoulos.
Yeah, but anyways, the point is that, you know, it's Fart. Nebulous. Natural wine is a definition is a nebulous fart that's always going to be changing depending on who's farting it out. But the terms that we use to describe natural wine, the terms that we use to define technique, I think are important and should be respected and should be something that we all know. Like, it's like, I say this in my book, but I'm like, you know, I can be like, yo, this white gelt is dope, dude. And like, that's fine. But at the same time, that's not going to help me.
You weren't like, this Zweigelt is, I can't think of anything.
Well, no, but I mean, like, it's not going to help you like in terms of like having a conversation about filtration, for example. You know, like you
the
have
Zweigelt
to be.
Is dope and unfiltered, but it's filtered.
Yeah. Where's the, where are the.
Sorry, that was me farting.
Yeah. Goodbye, Moon Man.
Morty was so into it. Did he have the hots for that fart?
Oh yeah, I did.
Was he like sexually attracted?
I don't
to
think.
That fart?
Stop. No, Morty's only sexually attracted to the sex doll that he impregnated. And anyways,
no. And what's her name?
Zorp. Jessica.
Jessica.
I was supposed to be named Jessica, but instead I was named Marissa, so it all worked out.
You only like me when I'm unhealthy.
Such a good episode. That's how I feel about, I only like me when I'm unhealthy. Natural wine, as a definition, is a nebulous fart that depends on who's fucking farting it out. But the words and the definitions that we use for the techniques.
Basically, bitch, own up to your shit.
No, but because those words are important. Those words are important.
If you filter, fucking say you filter.
Because transparency is better than
absolutely
than lying.
So earlier
appropriating words. It's better than appropriating words.
You asked me about my definition of natural wine. It's basically the same. But one of the things that I always talk about,
goodbye, Moon Man,
is honesty, and I think honesty is the linchpin of natural winemaking.
I think so too. But then going back to what you were talking about with intention, there can be great intention and still an appropriation of words.
But if your intention and you're honest about your intention.
Yes. And you, I just think that, I think as someone that, I agree with you, as someone though that I genuinely feel my job is to educate the consumer. It's impossible to educate the consumer if
people
are just using words for whatever they want.
Absolutely.
Like, you know, I'm trying to think of a word that I could say about myself that is,
also,
you know, I'm a magician. I'm just going to go start. I'm going to be like, hey, everybody. So I'm a magician. And they're like,
do some magic. And I'm like, Marissa, I want to see a magic trick right now. I love magic.
And I'm like, all right, I'm going to open this bottle of wine and tomorrow I'll have an article for you. There's my magic. And they're like, wait, that's not magic. That means you're a writer. And I'm like, does it? Because it's sort of magic. I'm kind of a magician. I just think that we do have to have a common language and we have to be able to understand. We have to be able to understand the techniques that we're talking about and understand the things that we're talking about and educate the consumer on those things, because words, not all words are nebulous. You know, like some words mean very definite things. And if we don't stick to those things, then they mean nothing.
Couldn't somebody make the argument though that then if natural wine is nebulous... But natural wine, as I'm
natural
saying...
Natural wine is a philosophy.
I can't believe we drank this whole bottle.
Why not? We drink this much all the time.
I don't know, because I feel like in our last podcast, we were like, we don't have to drink the whole bottle. And then
no one ever said that.
I think I might have.
I think I thought you were just joking. I mean, like,
no, it turns out that this podcast is us just drinking the whole bottle.
I'm sorry, but two glasses of wine in an hour is pretty fucking normal.
Well, what about all the fucking cocaine that you brought, Marissa?
Well, that's our business. No one else's business, all right?
You know how hard it is going to be to edit out every 3 minutes?
I think it might be hard to edit out all the burps. Yeah. And all the goodbye, moon man, which is not even my favorite song from the show, but it's fine.
You like Get Swifty?
I do like Get Swifty.
It's like barely a song.
Hey, but it's because when I'm sick, I can really do it.
You sound like Rick.
I'm like, hey, take off your pants and your panties, shit on the floor. But I'm not sick right now, so it doesn't sound as good.
Natural wine is the, right, like,
But the point is, we know that natural wine is this ambiguous thing. I think that,
like I said, I just want to stop calling it natural wine and just call it fucking wine.
I would love to do that, but then that, but the consumer is not there yet.
And just like, I want everyone to know that the other stuff,
yeah, but that's
not,
how do they know
the not natural wine is the stuff that we need?
Yeah,
to
but
label. That,
but of course, but they don't label it. I mean, it says like, you know, quail creek on it or whatever.
Quail, is that a quail stuff?
Quail stuff. Quail.
Are you
quail
into
place.
Wine and golfing and
$2 wine
and tiki torches? Come on down to Quail Stuff
by Kanye West, one of his 300 properties in Calabasas.
We're gonna.
I like
drink.
How I said properties.
Properties.
No, I just think that we need to have,
when the fuck though is Franzia or whoever gonna put on their box wine the word natural? And
I'm
it's
sure.
really gonna fuck.
But
like that's gonna fuck
but
everything.
But that's not the point. Like natural is always good. I think that natural is going to always be this ambiguous thing. Whereas what we have to be careful of is the other words that describe specific techniques. And specific definitions of natural wine being appropriated.
Do you remember when health food stores were called natural food stores?
Of course.
And then, for whatever reason, they went away and they went to health. Could we just call it health wine?
No, I don't know why you're harping on the natural thing. Like, I'm talking about like the misuse of things like Sansouf or the misuse of Petalint Naturel or the misuse of, or not even, like these people, I'm sure, like they have great intentions, but the road to hell was paved a good way.
Good intentions.
God damn it. I was on one. It could have been good. It could have been sharp. It could have been poignant.
No, I know.
I agree with you. So my thing is someone that writes for the consumer. My job is to write for the consumer. How do I teach people about natural wine to get them to a point where they understand that it is just wine? If the words of the techniques and all of these important things that surround natural wine are being used willy-nilly. I just think that words that have to do with technique... Or, you know, just this common language that actually ties wine making together and makes us able to have conversations that we all understand. Those definitions need to be respected.
And if you're a quote unquote natural winemaker and out of the 5 wines you make, 2 of them don't fit the definition, I think it's okay to say these 3 wines do. These 3 wines are natural wine. These 2, I'm not there yet.
Of course.
And I will get there. And I don't think that us as buyers or me previously as a buyer or us as consumers are going to hold that against the winemakers for being honest. About
no, I'd
it.
Much rather someone be honest than not. And also, too, there's nothing wrong with saying you're low intervention. You know, like I think that, well, which is another ambiguous term.
It is very ambiguous. It's like sustainable. I flush toilets.
No, but I think low intervention is better than sustainable.
Because low intervention at least implies
that you're trying. Low intervention. See, going back to what you said earlier about the intention, I think if you say that you're low intervention, that implies the intention that you are pursuing natural wine, with whether or not you're there or not. And like I said, I want great wines. I want great wines made by people that care about them. And sometimes nature doesn't allow for that, you know? And I would much rather a winemaker add some sulfur bottling or do a little bit of irrigation than lose their entire crop, you know, or like lose an entire vintage.
No, motherfucker, it's a business.
It's a
business.
It's got to be, it can't be sustainable just in toilet flushing. It's got to be sustainable financially.
Correct. You can't be the greatest winemakers if you're out of business.
If you, goodbye, Moonman.
You can't. You have to be in business. You have to stay in business.
You have to stay in business, yeah.
And you can't grow. You can't do anything.
Yeah. Let's talk about, okay, let's find a...
What else did you say? You said, was it just this, the definition of natural, or was there another suggestion?
Hold on. No. Well, I want to talk about the language, which I'm going to ask you a question about.
Okay, cool. Let's go.
Adam, what are some words that you think are being misused in wine currently?
Oh, that's interesting. So what are people saying? Well, first and foremost, I think we've hit on the word sustainable.
Yes, sustainable. But I think sustainable is a word like natural, where it is purposefully ambiguous and kind of, it's a philosophy. But I think that we know that sustainable is more of a marketing tool than anything.
And I feel low intervention. You mentioned low intervention, but I feel low intervention is kind of falls in that same category. Yeah, because I don't know what that means when someone says low intervention.
I feel like when someone says low intervention, it is touching upon the intention that you talked about.
But did they inoculate with yeast?
It depends. You got to ask. When a winemaker says that they did something low intervention, you're trusting the winemaker.
As a buyer or as a former buyer, when I would meet a winemaker, I would immediately respect the winemaker. Like immediately. I mean, usually respect is earned. So I would immediately be like...
I hope respect is always earned.
No, but I'm saying like they earned it immediately. If I meet a winemaker and like the first... like I'm like, oh, hi, nice to meet you. I love your wines. And like the first things out of their mouths basically are, we organic farm. We use native yeast. We don't filter, right? Like just right off the bat. Those are the first three things they say to me. Then I'm like, okay, from there, I kind of understand where they're going. But if the first things they say to me are, we have limestone.
Schist.
Yeah, we have schist in the vineyard. We do this kind of pergola. And we have a winemaker that has won many awards. Like that kind of shit is like... you're not telling me really anything about your wine.
But that's not misappropriating words, though. That's just them kind of...
avoiding situations.
Avoiding the words.
So the words, I think, aren't necessarily words that they... It's more words they avoid to talk about or use as opposed to... I don't know how often people are lying to me as more as...
all the time.
Constantly. Or it's people... intentionally not bringing up topics of conversation.
But then that goes back to the posturing.
Yeah, it's like trying really hard to make it so that I don't bring... like you're trying to... you know how you're a magician?
Yes.
It's like it's the smoke and mirrors.
I did actually go to magic classes when I was a kid. I kind of was into magic.
It's the smoke and mirrors. I think the concept of terroir is smoke and mirrors.
You think the concept of terroir is smoke and mirrors?
Yeah, I do.
Wait, you're not a terroir? You don't believe in terroir?
I vaguely believe in terroir.
Really?
I think that the winemaker is far, far more important.
Yeah, but the terroir depends so much on what the winemaker wants to do with it.
That's, I think, the concept of terroir to me is like the pigment of a paint color. So you can have really high quality pigmented paint. But if your artist is crap, you're going to make crap painting. But if your artist is really, really incredible, they're going to make incredible paintings.
Of course.
So to me, pigment, I don't look at paintings and go, pigment. I look at paintings and see the whole picture. And I think with wine, it's the same thing. So yeah, I don't believe in terroir.
But that's not saying that you don't believe in pigment.
No, I believe in pigment.
But also pigment, but I think that actually that's... I think that that is interesting because pigment... in color, you know, an artist can decide how much they want out of that. I personally believe that terroir is the one thing that a commercial winery, they can change the color of a wine, they can change the way a wine tastes, they can change how a wine feels, you know, texturally. The one thing that a commercial laboratory, you know, can't make. They can't replicate terroir and like minerality.
I'm not saying terroir isn't.
You said that terroir like basically wasn't real.
I'm not saying it's not real. I'm saying it's marketing.
You think it's?
I believe in. I do have that there. Single sites exist. Single vineyards. You can say this wine over here grows a certain way because of certain. the sun exposure, because of the soil, because of, you know, but in reality, we really have to be honest, the variety that's planted matters first and foremost, right? So you can have, so I can be in Burgundy or I can be in the Rheingau and I could be, I can, and you know, over thousands of years, they figured out which varieties work best there, right? So like, oh, Pinot Noir in Burgundy or Chardonnay.
Is that not a part about?
And Riesling. And so what I'm saying is if all of a sudden I wanted to plant Cabernet Sauvignon, right, in Burgundy, and then I gave you Cabernet Sauvignon from Burgundy, and you could say, oh, this terroir
Bourgogne
is not appropriate for this grape and sun exposure and soil and all that sort of stuff. But if I made a fucking killer Cabernet that was in Burgundy, doesn't that sort of, and that's possible.
It I understand possible what you're
to,
saying.
To do. So all I'm saying is I believe in terroir. I'm saying I don't think it has as important a role to play. I think it's smoke and mirrors. I think it's look over at my left hand right here as I steal your watch from you in magic. Because I can say terroir, 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 but if in the vineyard I'm inoculating with yeast,
of course,
I'm filtering.
I understand what you're saying, and I agree with you that
what I was saying is that when I meet a winemaker and they say I don't filter, I don't inoculate with yeast, and I farm organically, that I'm like, okay, you're cool. But if you're like,
you just went back to something like 10 minutes ago.
But if they're like, well, because this is where I'm going back. But if they say terroir and then they talk about their winemaker, I know that they're not natural.
So yeah, I think though, to rebuttal your terroir, I think the most important thing for a wine is for it to taste where it's from, like for it to taste like the land that it came from. And I'm not saying
I agree with you completely.
Do you? Because you just had a whole thing about you, how you don't, how you think that that's smoke and mirrors.
I think talking about what I meant, I said talking about terroir. Terroir exists.
Terroir exists.
It's
and
real.
I think, yeah, terroir is real and it exists. And I also think that like,
but it doesn't overpower variety and winemaker.
But I think that it's what I think a good wine, regardless of the variety or the winemaker, should be trying to express its terroir.
And it's up to the winemaker to see
that. It's up to the winemaker
that.
To see that and do that. And there's a lot of winemakers that don't care for that, and that's fine.
Like what we said about natural wine. It's so made in the wine in the winery.
It's so made in the winery, and it really depends on what the winemaker wants to do. But for me, I think that what makes a wine real, and it's someone that, you know, for those of you who are like, who the fuck is this bitch talking? You know, I write about wine, but I got started writing about wine in 2011 because I would open a bottle of wine and I loved that it could take me somewhere, that I could taste a place that maybe I'd never been to. Like, I was so broke in my 20s. I moved to LA to be a comedy writer and had 3-day jobs, and I was, you know, I had nothing. Like, I, you know, like people spend like summers abroad. Like, no, I never, like the first time I went to Europe was like 5 years ago because I never had the money to do that. But
she's lying. She's never been to Europe.
I've never been to Europe.
She's been to LaGuardia.
I've been to LaGuardia and I've just photoshopped everything on my Instagram. But, you know, to me, I think terroir is so important. And the word of that is very important because, you know, as someone that wasn't able to travel, as someone that wasn't able to do these things, I could open a bottle of wine and taste a place that I had never been to, and I could still taste it. You know, you can. I'm sorry, like you can taste a winery that's like close to the sea versus one that isn't. You can taste like sandiness or salinity or like all these different things. And
but the winemaker,
the winemaker has
can't
to make
see
that
the hand
choice.
Movements I'm making. Focused it in on that.
Yes.
That wasn't just cart, like it wasn't like they
but
got-
to say that like if someone brings up the word terroir, you're gonna write them off. I think that that's fucking bullshit.
No, I'm saying that if that's where they lead, if they lead with terroir,
because I think leading with terroir is a great thing.
I think of it like Steinway pianos, right? Like if I meet you and you're a musician and you're a pianist, and I'm like, oh my God, you're a pianist. What kind of pianist are you? And they're
like,
what kind
of pianist are you?
And they're like,
I'm a Harvey Weinstein.
I'm a Steinway player. I play on a Steinway. I'd be like, fuck you, you elitist piece of shit. I just want to know if you play jazz or
so
like.
So you don't like. So you don't like the word terroir because you think it's elitist?
To some degree, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Because I think that terroir is something that's been like kind of cast
it's why,
aside.
Like, it's like why Burgundy is more valuable than Loire.
But I don't think that's true. I think it depends on what you value out of terroir.
But because like Burgundy is definitely more valuable. Like it's expensive. It wine. On, like the land per like
of course,
square
but,
hectare.
But I'm talking about like the actual taste of it. Like I think that there's
no, of
like,
course. But I'm talking about it's the reason why Burgundy is a more expensive place to buy land.
But here's a great.
I can play music on my Wurlitzer just as well as I can on my Steinway.
Okay. What I was going to say is that this makes a great point that no matter what, the fact that we're using the word terroir and we are able to have a conversation about what terroir is and means to both of us shows how important the common, like, common language is. You know, like...
yeah, you're... you did a great job. That was...
So it doesn't matter, like, because you're talking about terroir from, like, a buyer standpoint from like a, and you have such a different background than I do in terms of like where you came from. To me, I don't, because I started as a consumer drinking Tubuck Chuck, I don't look at regions as one region being better than another region. I don't really like, I don't give a fuck about like Bordeaux versus Burgundy versus the Loire or whatever. To me, terroir is important just because I want to taste the land. Like I want to taste where it's from. Like I want to taste that, and it's not about like it's not about one piece of land being more important or more expensive, which like kind of just shows like
right when Evan makes wine in Utah, you want to taste Utah, and you
yes.
And you don't care if Utah tastes
different,
and you're not going to necessarily label it as better or worse than
no, because I don't think that there's I don't, I mean of course there's better places to grow wine than others, but there's also. You know, better, like you were talking about, there's better varieties to grow yeah. in different places.
And there's
than
also
others.
Better, like, vineyard managers than others. So, like, one vineyard manager in one region is going to be better. Like, so I, you know, he's in a shitty, technically a shitty region, but he's an incredible, or she is an incredible vineyard manager.
And if they're using the right grapes.
Right. So she does a great job versus the person who's in Burgundy, who technically has better terroir, but is making shittier wine because she...
Because they're relying on terroir entirely.
Exactly. That's where I say I don't trust terroir. So when I don't trust terroir, I'm talking about when a winemaker comes to me and they lead with terroir, I know that it's because they have nothing else
yeah.
to back it up.
See, for me, when I taste a wine, I want to taste terroir because if they cannot taste the terroir, then I feel that there is no winemaking behind it.
A great winemaker should... work towards terroir.
A great, yes. I think that it, because why are you making...
But a great winemaker shouldn't lead with terroir, for me.
I don't know, though.
I want them to say that they're doing everything in their power to make sure the terroir is represented.
But that's the same thing.
Right, but I'm talking about how they lead, right? So they have to come
You're
in
You're talking
and say,
about salesmanship.
That's what we talked about. That's what I was talking about.
You're talking about salesmanship.
I'm saying when I meet a winemaker and they start with, I use native yeast, I don't filter, and I organically farm, I give them immediately a pass because I know they're starting with that. So that means that whatever they're doing to make sure that their terroir is...
But what if they're just a shy winemaker and they just are nervous and then they say terroir, but they mean all that?
Well, take some classes at your community college to learn how to public speaker. Well, I don't like it.
I think that you've been burned as a wine buyer.
That's probably true.
Like we're a natural wine podcast. We know that the people are not even, why do you keep bringing up like terroir and inoculated yeast?
Because I feel like that's like the biggest thing.
No, it's because you've been burned. You've been burned by people that like came to you and was like, I'm all about terroir, and then didn't tell you that they inoculated, and then you got fucking burned. But again, this goes back to what I was saying, like we are able to have a conversation about two different sides of really the wine industry in a way, and like because as someone that used to buy and as a consumer, as someone and as both of us as avid drinkers, you know, we're able to use the word terroir to have this conversation. And if someone decided that terroir decided to mean, you know, actually terroir is only the flooring of the cellar. That's it. And you're like, wait, what? Like, what do you mean? Like,
yeah, I use what's it called? Parquet.
Yeah, it's only parquet. That's my terroir in my cellar.
Yeah.
And that's what I base my wine off of. And then you're like, wait, what? That's not terroir at all. But the fact that we have a common understanding of what Terroir is, which I guess for everyone listening, if you don't know, Terroir is the land...
Flooring on your... Yes,
flooring of your cellar and your kitchen. My Terroir, I hope linoleum. One day... It's not linoleum, it's fucking wood. It's legit wood, and I hope one day for it to be Spanish goddamn tiles. But, you know, Terroir is the land on which... you know, the vineyard is, all of the rock and dirt and all of that
sun
shit.
Sun exposure,
the climate, vegetation, animal life, everything that is.
I need to describe it this way. So genetically speaking, I am a person, right? My genetics.
I don't know.
I was born in Los Angeles.
Sure?
Yeah. I was born in Los Angeles. Where I was born determined certain things about me. I could take my
same... Yeah, you're wearing a backwards hat.
I could take my same genetic...
You say yogurt.
I could say my same genetic makeup, and I could have been born in New York, and the way I spoke...
You'd be a monster.
I'd be wearing Timberlands. It would have been a whole different thing. So that's Terroir. It's where you're raised.
Yes. And but not it, because you weren't from the ground.
And how it defines you. I can say humans have their own personal Terroir.
So we've talked about how some words and how a lot of words definitely have meaning and definition that we want to stick to. But at the same time, there's a ton of words that I kind of think don't fucking matter. Adam, what are some words that you don't think fucking matter?
To quote ZZ Top, legs, legs, legs.
Legs are... So legs, I think there's such a common misconception about what legs are. Everyone's like, it's the quality of the wine. I'm like, dude, that's the... The sugar
I've
and alcohol.
I've heard sugar and alcohol, but like I don't know, to be honest. And I'm sure there's like a scientific thing, but it in no way denotes quality.
No, and also just like stop fucking caring because it actually does denote sugar and alcohol. It's like an alcohol content thing. But if you want to know the alcohol content of your wine, look on the goddamn label. You don't need to look at the goddamn legs. Like, what are you going to, like, ooh. So legs definitely, I think, is something that you don't need to care about.
Yeah.
I think that can just go. I think that people should just stop talking about it outside of like, look how pretty
they are.
Actually,
it's like, no, because it's like a signifier. Like I said earlier, when they start with Terroir, it's a signifier as someone in the wine industry that like, no one cares. No one cares. Stop talking about it.
Unless you're just like, ooh, the legs are pretty and I want to get it on my gram, like for a cool photo. I don't want to hear about it. Goodbye, moon man.
Another word, let's see, what else in wine do I think is irrelevant that people don't need to talk about?
Or it's not even that. Like, I guess like words that that don't matter as much as people think that they do.
I think dry. Like, I know that it has a meaning and a definition, but I feel like people use it in a wrong way. And I think that
someone's
blowing a whistle.
I'm like, is T.I. outside my house? Blow the whistle. Okay, so... Blow the whistle.
No, hold on. No, so I was saying dry. And dry has a serious, solid definition.
I think that
dry people use it wrong, and people don't use dry appropriately. So dry just means whether there's residual sugar or not. But people say, I want a dry wine. It's like, it doesn't make sense to me. Like, you either need to learn what the actual definition is or just stop using that word in general.
I think that I'm going to disagree with you only because on the behalf of the consumer that maybe doesn't know as much about wine as anyone else, if they're in a restaurant or they're somewhere and they don't know a ton, to say that they do want a dry wine is actually progressive for them. That's good for them to at least like give some sort of descriptor.
I guess, but like when was the last time you went to a restaurant and you ordered a glass of wine and it was sweet? Not intentionally
but
ordering
people don't
a sweet
understand,
wine.
But people don't understand that sweet doesn't mean fruity. Most people think that when they say sweet, when most consumers say sweet, they actually mean fruity. Quick trick. If you think a wine might be sweet and you're like, is it sweet or is it fruity? Plug your nose and drink it. If it still tastes sweet, it's sweet.
Oh, that's great. I love that.
Yeah, because
I thought you were going to be like, pour it on your body, and if you're sticky, it's sweet.
Well, that too. But we already talked about me and Zinfandel, so we're done there. So because sweet is a sensation.
Yeah, totally. That makes total sense.
Sweet is a sensation versus fruity is an aroma. And so a lot, I agree with you that I think that most people use dry and sweet poorly, but for the general consumer, I still think that dry is not a bad descriptor.
No, like, dry is not. I guess what I'm saying is there needs to be. I don't. I don't care if you say you like dry wine.
I like dry wines.
Tell me you like sweet wines or don't say anything at all.
So, I mean, I think, okay, so you say dry can go. Or I guess, yeah.
Not dry. Dry just, yeah, fuck it. I don't even want it. I don't even need it.
You don't want
dry.
Also,
no, because there's also wines that are like totally have residual sugar.
But then how else would you...
And taste dry. Like you can taste them and 9 people out of 10, maybe 10 out of 10 are going to say dry wine. And they're like, fuck you, 7 grams of residual sugar. And like that exists. That's real. That's like a real thing.
But I think for a consumer going in to buy a wine...
Why do you need to declare that you like dry wine?
Well, no, I just think that it's important for consumers to develop confidence and to be able to describe wines that they like in whatever ways they can as they build their palate.
This wine we're tasting has a lot of fruit to it.
Absolutely.
It could be perceived by somebody as sweet. But it's not.
But it's not.
It's dry.
It's dry.
So I don't need them to say... this is sweet when in fact that definition is incorrect. What I'm saying is I don't need to have like a semantic argument with a consumer who doesn't understand sweet and dry.
But let's put yourself back in your SOM days, sommelier days.
We actually refer to it as hashtag sommelier.
Excuse me. Hashtag TBT to hashtag SOM life.
Yes, thank you.
Isn't it important for consumers to give you as much information as they can about what they do and don't like?
To some degree, yes. But when, like we said, when they use words that they don't understand the definition of, i.e. dry.
But I think that dry
gets in the way of stuff.
I think that dry is a good place for people to start.
No, but a lot of people will use dry as tannin.
Yes.
A lot of people will use dry as acidity.
So I still think that, I mean, for me, I still think that dry is not a bad place for a consumer to start if, like, they know nothing about wine.
Well, we can both agree legs fucking are stupid.
Legs are stupid. Dry, I agree with you, but I think that the dry sweetness thing is, again, about education.
Yeah.
You know? And
for anybody who works the floor of any restaurant or works a wine bar or works in a wine shop.
Like, don't be like, now all these people are going to be like, I heard on this podcast, dry is fucking stupid.
So fuck you.
No, but I'm saying talk to people.
Use real language.
No, I get it because that's the way I write about wines.
Right. And that's what I'm saying. That's why I tell people to read wine all the time because speak like
it's
that.
It's the fucking best.
Speak like that. That's the language that people understand. That's where language comes in. Like, use common language people understand.
Use common language, but you also have to
dry people don't understand.
I agree that there needs to be a better understanding of what dry is. So what is dry to you then?
Dry technically means no sugar. But you can taste a wine that tastes dry that has sugar. That exists. You can have a wine that has a shit ton of acidity and residual sugar.
But then if someone at a restaurant that you were working at said, I want a dry wine, and you still brought that wine out and they were happy with it, then why, like, you still gave them what they wanted?
But what I'm saying is it's a word that has lost meaning because I can give you a wine that technically is not dry, technically, and you will perceive it as dry. So you will drink it and go, that dry wine was very good. And in the back of my head, I'm like, haha, joke's on you, 3 grams residual sugar in that wine.
The word doesn't matter, but I think that that's still an important word for a consumer.
To say that they want to drink a wine that is perceived to not be sweet...
Yes, because I think that it's hard for a lot of consumers. Like, you were a sommelier. Like,
this wine is so good.
Yeah, it's great. I think even now, like, I mean, some people consider me a wine professional. But someone that knows a lot about wine, like, I will still say that I want, like, I will still use the word dry. For me, dry is a malleable word.
Yeah.
It doesn't need to go. I think that it still has. I think that dry still has some positivity to it. Legs, there's nothing positive about it. It's just like fucking like an optical illusion in your fucking glass. Like, who the fuck cares? I guess it's not an optical illusion. It's actually just like optics. But no, I just think it's I think that language can change, but we also have to start with education and like move forward with that and like always be.
Right, if we had started the conversation as skin contact, not orange.
Yes.
It would have been a better way to start.
Yeah, and I'm not saying it's like the end all be all. I'm not saying it's like totally... So the finish is have respect for words that matter and throw away the ones that don't, like legs. I guess legs is the only one that we decided didn't matter. So have respect for words. Don't give a fuck about legs unless they're mine because they're great.
And like and comment. And if you want, no, I don't know. I just hear that on other
like,
things.
Like, comment, and subscribe. Actually, don't comment because you're going to say something shitty.
No, like, I was going to say, like, we don't have, it's just, it would be cool to comment to see the other words that people are, like, done with in wine.
Well, maybe on our Instagram, you will be able to do that.
Okay.
DM us at Natural Disaster Pod on Instagram.
Yeah.
And, like, I don't know. You can send us stuff. We really only care about us and people that care about us.
Yeah, Adam likes feet pics. No, it's
third.
Not true.
Yeah, well, I knew it wasn't true. It obviously wasn't true because you started talking in the third person. You're like, Adam likes this. I'm like, Marissa likes chocolate pudding. It's like, what?
Marissa likes chocolate pudding. Adam likes feet.
But we talked about feet in the last podcast. So maybe,
I don't like feet. I think it's funny.
This is the second time you brought up feet. So I don't know. It's either a great joke like sustainable toilet stuff or... Or you just really love feet and your wife is at home like, God fucking damn.
No, because she would be like, absolutely, he doesn't like feet because she always wants her feet massaged.
Ooh, see, I never want my feet massaged. And then Ben was like, I'll massage your feet. And I was like, okay.
Every night wants her feet massaged. Every night.
Why? Have you ever done it once?
I've done it every night. I do it every day.
Oh.
But it's not like, it's always very reluctantly.
I'm
not.
So...
No, it's not as nice as you. It, like, if.
How long do you do it for?
Maybe a minute each foot, 2 minutes.
That's a good amount of time. Because I know it feels like an eternity when you're massaging someone else. No one, hey, hot tip is someone that's been in a relationship for 9 years. No one likes giving massages. If your partner is giving you a massage,
they hate you.
They're doing it because they love you and they fucking hate you in that moment.
Yeah, I would rather... I love my wife, and I think she's amazing. But I don't want to...
I love my husband, and I'll like be rubbing his back, and I'm like, I'm done. Has it been 30 seconds? Like, it's like my hands are so small, and your back is so big.
Can you imagine being a professional masseuse?
You would have to love it as much as we love natural wine.
How is that possible?
You would have to love it as much as we love wine.
Maybe there's a correlation between people who like natural wine and hate giving massages.
I just think that most people hate getting massages and everyone loves getting massages. And that's why there's an entire profession that pays people to give them to you.
And it's not cheap. It's not like you can get like, oh, I got a $4 massage.
No, no.
Like all massages are expensive.
Also, if there was
they're all luxuries.
If it was a $4 massage, it would be just as good as like the Rex and Goliath $4 wine you get from the gas station.
See, I would thought you were going to say a $4 massage is just as good as a $200 massage.
Because
I feel like the person who's doing it for $4 would probably do it for free. They might be better than the $200 massage.
As someone that has a lot of shoulder problems, I think that it's worth paying for a massage.
Really?
Yeah, because I'm not
surprised by your shoulder problems. I'm surprised by the cost.
Listen, no, you pay for what something is worth. That's why natural wine is not $2.
Have you ever had a good massage? Or paid for a quality massage and it not been quality?
No.
So every time it's quality. Maybe that's the difference between a less expensive massage.
Or maybe it just feels good to have hands on your back.
That's what I was saying. Like all massages are good massages, right?
Mm.
I'm not a massage person. I don't get massage. I'd never, ever.
I don't think that all massage... I can just tell when my husband's not into it. Like with most things, I can just tell when he's not into it. That's fine.
He's like, you want to watch some Rick and Morty episodes?
I'm like, yes.
Yeah.
He's like, oh man, I never have to give him a massage again. I don't ask my husband for massages very often. I go pay for them. Anyways,
do we have enough?
We're finished here.
Do you think we have enough?
If this isn't enough, then we'll never be enough. All right. Thank you so much for joining.
Yeah, we have to say goodbye. This is the hardest part. This is the hardest part.
No, hold on. I feel like I got a burp. All right. Thank you guys so much for joining us on the second episode of Natural Disasters with me, Marissa, and...
Adam.
And we hope you join us again. And
we promise it will get better.
It's going to get better.
And better. And better. And better.
Go look up the Ira Glass quote, all right?
Yeah.
It's all about closing the gap and drinking more wine.
But,
Hold on, should I Ross that something real quick?
We have to say goodbye.
Okay, goodbye.
Bye.